introduce our tour representatives.
Yeah. Okay. So thank you for coming. Glad to see so many of you here. I'd like to introduce you to Jeff Ott. He's actually our Pacific Northwest Recording Academy president.
Yes, you got it right.
And
it's a very long title.
A really nice dude. And many years ago, he fell in love with his studio and bought it with his friend Jonathan. And they've been here ever since and keeping the studio and the music alive here. What else can I say? I know we got a lot to get through, so I won't talk anymore. And we got Carson back here also, who's also a studio engineer here.
He's the dude.
So Jeff, I think, is going to talk about some of the history and stuff in this room, and then probably half of you need to venture into the control room with Carson, and he'll give you some info about the desk. And I know one of the exciting things that's happened recently here at the studio is that the studio has been raising funds to refurbish their vintage Neve console, which takes a lot of money and expertise. And because they wanted to keep the console here, which I'm sure they'll tell you more about, they've started some fundraising and have some other things coming up. They also got picked up by Rolling Stone magazine and some local news channels and other things to promote that. So
a lot of good support.
Jeff Ott.
Cool. Thanks, guys. It's really cool to have AES and Cascade microphones and all you guys here. It's a really cool evening talking to Ken and meeting him earlier. Really cool product, so glad you guys could be here. And glad you guys could come here and check out London Bridge Studio. It's been kind of a passion of ours for the last 10 years to let the community know that we're here, because it was such a private studio for a long time, and it was making so many of those records that I grew up on and that I loved, and it's what brought me up here, the Pearl Jam 10 and Soundgarden and Temple of the Dog. Those kind of records, you know, were just the ones that were really singing to me at the time. So I came up here to search out London Bridge Studio and Rick Parashar, and like Rich said, I fell in love with the place and kind of got hooked and have never really been able to leave. So here I am. It's a great place, and Rich was talking about, we have a Neve console that's 40 years old now, and we've been raising funds to help us restore it, because we really want to bring it back to life and let it live on another 40 years, and it's just really expensive. So we're about halfway through the process on that, and we can talk about it more when we go into the control room if anybody has any questions. But, yeah, so basically we're just a vibrant studio. We're open to the community. We're doing a lot. We have a new label out, London Tone Music, and we're doing a single a week for this whole year. So 52 new and undiscovered bands that we sign and promote each year. So, I mean, each week for this whole year. So that's a pretty cool undertaking, too, and that's led to some really fun times and late nights. So, yeah, let's start a tour. And basically, I think we're going to split everybody up so we can kind of get half in there and half out here, and we'll talk about the rooms, answer any questions about the equipment, and then we'll kind of do a swap. And yeah, and then get on to cookies or something, right?
No.
What?
You have to wait.
Yeah, we'll do that. And then I think we have some AES business. We'll probably take account of AES members that are in attendance, and we'll give everybody an opportunity to introduce themselves as well and let us know about what you do in audio. And then we'll move into Ken here with Cascade.
Nice.
And I'll introduce Ken later when we get to that.
Later. Don't meet Ken yet.
Yeah.
All right, so how do we choose?
Do you need the mic?
Why don't we just go right down the middle of the aisle?
All right.
Cool.
Yeah, I know you all just sat down, but if you don't want to go in the if you don't want to get up and go in the control room, that's okay. But for those of you who do want to, I guess some of you should maybe this side of the room first.
And I like it. There's some doers, man.
I haven't heard any of this.
Do you want to use the mic for in here, or do you just want
to? I don't know. Depends. Oh,
all right.
I didn't know this thing was being recorded.
Oh, yeah.
Is this thing on?
Yeah, we have our own.
It's only the police? That's good, then. Nice.
All right. Well, does anybody have any questions or anything they'd like to know about this room? Not really.
You said that Soundgarden recorded here?
Yeah, they did Louder Than Love.
Oh, Louder Than Love?
Yeah. So one of their earlier songs, or one of their earlier records. So this was kind of the signature sound of London Bridge, really started with this brick wall right here. This was built, this was purposely built. It's in the dimensions, you know, it's in the on the book. So it has a kind of concave surface to it, and it also, with this, if you come back here, you can see there's a high-end trap. So there's kind of like two different things working for you. There's this really reflective surface, but then there's also this area catching a lot of garbage that would normally in a lot of rooms just turn into sizzle. So this room was always known as having this fat sound because you put the room mics out there and all that sizzle would be gone. And what you heard is kick drum. And what you heard was the throat of the snare. And what you heard was the toms. So that's kind of what I first heard when I came in here and didn't realize that not every studio sounded like that. I kind of just expected that that's what it was going to sound like. So kind of this naturally EQ'd sound. Like if you listen to a Temple of the Dog, that is just like straight up like that. You put a drum kit here and 287s back there by the piano, and that's the sound of that drum set. So it's a very signature sounding room, and it almost bothered me for a while because I worked here so long. I was just like, I'm tired of that sound. But it took me a while to realize it's a good sound, and you just have to embrace it. So it's been one of the bane of my existences, but it's also been something that's made me sound good, you know. So that's the thing about this room. When I heard that it was going to sell, I was like, there's no way, because where am I going to cut drums at? Everyone's going to know that I don't know what I'm doing. So we kept it. And the other cool thing is I love this skylight, because it always meant during the day you got to work, you know? And then like at 7 or 8 o'clock at night, then you can light the candles and like get moody. But it was always like during the day, lights are on, work. So that was pretty cool. Lots of people like this area back here to do drums in if they're searching for a different kind of sound. And one interesting thing about these squares, when we recovered them, I always thought that they were just absorbent. I just figured that these were just absorbent squares. But actually what they are is like little foot-by-foot squares in there with different angles. Yeah, so when you look, actually the only absorbent material is really this header here, a couple of curtains, and then this area up here. There's like traps for sound that go up in there. But other than that, it's just about the angles. And the thing about this room is like when people play drums, no matter what tempo the music is, the room just like sits there and breathes right with it. It's a trip. So that's why like putting the 87s right here is just like, it's just magic.
Is there any specific bass scrapping stuff?
There is this header right here is cut all the way across, and it has like hanging membranes. So that, and then same with that back corner right there, all from top, from floor to ceiling, there's a huge like it's like all, it's hard, and then there's like a foot gap that's open. And then sound can go in there, and same kind of thing. There's hanging, on fish lines, there's like hanging insulation.
Do you know who designed it?
Jeff Turner. Yeah, he designed 4 studios, and they were all like major successes. 3 were in Canada, and they were doing like the Aerosmith songs and the all that big 80s stuff. But I'm not sure if any are still open. I think we're the last one. And I never got to hear those, so. But I know when they built this, also with the wood floors, like that was a really unique. There wasn't any studios in town that had the hardwood floors, so that they really wanted that in the design.
So do you have forced air heating going?
It sucks. It's cold in the winter. It's always cold. That's like the charm of London Bridge. Welcome. Your fingers are cold. Yeah, exactly. You know? Yeah, that's one thing that we'd like to figure out. Once we fix the Neve, we'll fix the heat, the AC. Get our priorities. Exactly.
But would you still use forced air or some other way of heating when that's not available?
You know, this was designed really well. Like, up above, you can get on top of this structure and still be underneath the roof of the building. And so all of the pipes that service these are all, like, separated, and they go at these weird angles. Like, so there's really no noise. But it's just not very efficient. Pushing heat from there, like, it's just kind of silly. What's that?
Hot air rises, so having it up top of the room.
Yeah, exactly.
What year was this built?
85. Well, it opened in 85, so it was built in 84. And a lot of it was reclaimed materials, like this hardwood floor and this side here was all from a gymnasium that was being torn down. And the bricks, a lot of that, because they're so discolored, because they just collected it all over the place. So it was really cool. Like, all the little doors, every door is, like, different, because it was like they were going down to Boeing surplus every day. Just like, what can we get? Yeah, they're really resourceful. So, yeah.
How much bleed is there to your neighbors?
There's no one's ever complained. You can hear us next door. And actually, since the gym moved in, that's been the major thing, because they come into ours, you know, because their people are dropping like these 100-pound weights, just, or 200 pounds, just. So that's been fun. But we just, Carson talks to him every Monday, and like, here's our schedule. You got to be quiet, you know. I mean, if it's a rock band, it doesn't really matter, but if it's strings or something. Or, you know, you gotta be careful. Welcome. Any questions? Anything else?
Did you want to tell them about your fundraising, or is that happening in the room?
Oh, well, we can talk about everywhere. Well, what we're doing is a major part of the fundraiser, which I should have talked about earlier, was we designed a whole new back for the Neve console that's made out of a clear plexiglass. So you'll be able to see right through it into the guts and see like all the cool wiring that happens back there. But what we're also doing is we're selling 20 characters where you can get your name etched in there. And then it has like this LED light from below. So it just glows, and like all the etching just pops out. So that's one of the ways that we're going to fund the refurbishing of the console. And those are $250 each, and we're about half sold. So it's going good.
I've got a dumb question. Do you do all your recording live, or do you do drums and singers and guitarists?
Every project is different. But that is kind of one of our specialties, since when we walk in there, you can see we have like a vocal chamber right here, and then another room on the other side, and then we have a bass isolation in the garage. So you can't actually have drums, two guitars, a singer, a bass player, keyboards or whatever, all going live. And a lot of people take advantage of that, and a lot of people use that as like the foundation and build on top of it, or delete everything that they did but the drums and start over. You know, it's like, now that we're in the digital era, it's like you're just collecting data all the time, and whatever you're going to do with it is what you're going to do with it, you know? Things get replaced, things get deleted, things get edited, chopped up, spliced. There's just no telling. But yesterday we had a band in here set up live here, drums, bass, guitar, singer right in there to 2-inch tape live. You know, is that a killer? So it's just every day is totally different. It just depends on the outcome, you know. What do you want your final product to sound like?
How do you store your library?
Here you go. Good luck. Sign this. I keep everything, but I always give it to the client at the end and say, this is the master. Do not count on me, you know. Yeah. I don't know. I was trying a cloud storage for a while, and it was really cool, but then the internet was just kind of, I don't know if I was getting throttled or what, but it was like, you know, uploading 10 gigs every night, I think somebody was just like, what's going on? Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
How are we doing on time?
Cool. Yeah.
I'm curious exactly what is going on in the refurbishing. What exactly are you doing to the console?
Well, most of the console is modular. So right now is what we've done is we've sent 5 1081s, which are the EQ and mic pre's. We've sent them to be completely, all of the knobs and switches were put in sonic baths and cleaned up and replaced or restored to back to working order. Redo all the caps, check everything. Some things have been modded, some things have been changed, some things that we're just putting everything back to stock as close as we can do it. Fixing any kind of paint that's been scratched off, like just, you know, really trying to bring it back to state-of-the-art 1973, the day it rolled off the factory, because there's things that should work on it that we would use today that have been modded to be changed. You know, at some point in its career, it's like, we'll never need this anymore. And then I'm talking to somebody the other day, and wouldn't it be great if we could monitor the headphones? He's like, well, that's that button right there that doesn't work. You know, but it's there. So basically is what we're doing is we're shipping all the modules out right now, 5 at a time. We've had 5 back. They have 5 right now. When we get through all those, we'll go through the switchers, go through all that stuff. Then they will come here, and we'll have to shut down for hopefully 2 weeks. And they're going to go through the return side, the headphone side, the master section, make sure that now we can play an iPod through it. We can play a CD through it. We can play, you know, we need all these different inputs with level controls. It needs some parts of it need to be brought up to date with so people that can come in and work and just have the connectivity that they're expected to have. You know,
who's actually doing that?
A Vintage King.
Oh, cool.
Is doing it. It was cool because, you know, we're a working studio. We have to work every day, and it's like, trying to restore a console would mean that we have to shut down. So Vintage King came up with the idea, is like we can ship 5 out at a time and keep this train going. And then we have 5 APIs in there, so we pretty much didn't lose any channels. We just have now 5 APIs instead of 5 Neve. So no one can really complain. So everyone's been fine. So when we finish that cycle, then they'll come here and we'll do the second phase of it. So I think it was a plan that really worked out good.
The API, is that 500 series?
Yeah.
Yeah.
How do you like working with 500 series?
You know, I haven't really gotten over 25 inputs in a while, so I don't even use them. But I think they're great, you know, because we bring them all over the place. But I'm just such a diehard Neve guy. I've always used the Neve, and, you know, although we listened to the Moons today, and those sound great.
Cool.
Yeah. So you guys will be able to check those out later, but we were like, oh, wow. Oh, my goodness. But, yeah, that's just what I use.
Is this
sound?
Sure. Yeah, you want to start?
Yeah. Okay.
Cool.
I'm going to take the mic for the other half of the presentation with Carson. He's going to turn down the PA. And I'll let them know, and we'll try to cycle. Okay?
Fans really get stoked about that kind of
stuff. Oh, yeah, they're good. Yeah. Ready in there to swap.
Sure. What kind of amps are you driving the speakers with?
I believe it's Hyper. Let me check real quick. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we got a half one amp.
Well, these are powered here.
Yeah.
The Genelecs are powered.
The Hafler's driving the NS10, and then we've got Hafler amps for the JBLs up on top of the control room, actually. We have, I think, about 15 minutes, roughly, if
cool.
We're going to stay on schedule.
Yeah.
Might be a little shorter than the first session. In the
I just pop up here.
Yep, actually, we have that hardwired. We've got a Lexicon. Where? This guy.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, and this is pretty awesome. We've still got the famous setting that people always use, but this combined with our electro harmonics is kind of the, like, vocal moment. But that's one of the modifications they did, is they actually hardwired the reverb to go straight to the Lexicon, and then from the Lexicon, our returns are right there. And so that's really nice to, even just if it's for monitoring, we're able to send, you know, the from tape signal to that, and it just makes it for much more pleasant if you're going to be adding your own digital reverb later or whatever. It's really nice.
The mic trees, are they tubes or the transistors or what?
Transistors, yeah.
Discrete?
Yep.
Yeah, he did that on purpose.
So, hey, I'm Carson. I'm the house guy here. I could give you a little spiel about the board, I guess, but if you guys have any questions, I would rather answer those questions and talk about that a little bit. So anything you want to know about the studio or the board or anything like that, please interrupt. I'm all for that. So this board is a Neve 8048. It was built in 1973. It was one of the first boards to ever feature the 1081 Pre, which was pretty awesome. It came out a couple years after the 1073 did. And the 1073 is really the Pre that kind of, I mean, I'm sure Neve had a little bit of a name, but that was the one where it really was that legendary piece of gear where it was like that 1033 was awesome. And we've actually got six of them kind of over here on a sidecar that was modded in. That's something we can patch into. But for this board, it was really about the 1081, which used the same pre-wiring as a 1073, but it added the EQ. So it's a four-band EQ as opposed to the three-band. And really, the coolest thing about those EQs is that Neve really picked out the frequencies that you want. Like, as you're going through getting tones or whatever, generally any kind of problem solving or coloring that you're going to want, you're going to find it right there on the EQ. And that's such a nice thing to not have to worry about, you know, adding in plugins or anything like that during the tracking process. The fact that you're able to get your tones and get as close to what you need for the mix process is really nice. Even if you're not using those, it's really astounding how just pushing up the fader, you find yourself already within the ballpark of where you want to be, and that's such a blessing and so nice to be able to really simplify the process and as quickly get to the fun part, which is designing the tone and crafting the tone and making it work. And yeah, it's just a really enjoyable process as to something that's stressful, which happens. I'm sure we all know. So this board actually was first in a broadcast studio in England, went from there, and then a studio in France bought the board in, I believe, 1979. And the recording studio in France was using that. But when Rick and Raj Parashar started building the studio, this was actually the first decision they made, was this specific board they were going to buy. At that time in the mid-80s, this Neve sound was not popular, and so they got a screaming deal, because at that point everyone was wanting really clean sounds and really pristine, you know. It's the first time that the digital world was starting to come in, and it was like, let's get these clean gated reverbs and things like that. So I think it cost more to ship the board over from France than the actual board cost, and the joke's on them, because this board is awesome now. And it definitely came back in a big way, and a lot of that has to do with the music that was came through the studio in the late 80s, starting in the late 80s, and then continuing all throughout the 90s, and it was really a return to just that emotional, gritty, raw sound, where you're getting awesome musicians in a room, and you're going to record them everything, imperfections and all. And that sort of work motto and work ethic of just getting that kick-ass live take is still something that we strive for today. And definitely having two owners right now that started here in 91 and 94 respectively as interns, they know the workflow, they know the philosophy behind recording here, and now we're able to start integrating sort of the modern workflow that a modern client would want. And the marriage between those, the old school philosophy and the new technology and new workflow, has been really cool. to see how we manage that and still are able to provide cutting-edge service to everyone.
Along those lines, what are you guys using for ADD?
ADD, right now we're using the 192s that have been in here for a while. We do have a Apollo Orion that we just picked up a couple months ago that Jeff is very selfishly hogging for himself. But that thing is awesome, and I really do see us leaning more towards that just because it does offer that kind of flexibility. It's 32 in-outs. It has the Apollo converter, which is just amazing. And the coolest thing is that it's USB 3. So what that allows is anyone, if they work in Ableton, if they work in Cubase or Nuendo, they can bring their computer in, download the driver, and we could be recording to their computer in their software, and they're still accessing everything that the studio has to offer. And that kind of thing is what we are really striving for in terms of helping our modern clients out, because I use Pro Tools, and that means I know every wart that Pro Tools has. And if I was doing, you know, a huge mix project, or if I was doing a classical project, I probably wouldn't want to use Pro Tools. I would wrestle through it because I don't really know another system well enough. But at the same time, anyone should be in whatever makes them comfortable. And I think anyone could benefit from what the studio has to offer. And that's just one way that we can open the doors to anyone that wants to come in.
Do you know if that's something you guys have had to play with over the years? Because I can imagine you have this amazing analog gear, but how do you get it in and out of the box?
Well, luckily, I mean, the modern workflow has kind of dictated, you know, importing WAV files is sort of just a standard operating procedure now, it seems. And it's kind of a pain. So people would, you know, typically record in Pro Tools, then we just have to export all the waves, and they could import in whatever, and it just adds another step and another layer. Whereas if people are already working on what they enjoy, then they can be operating and running their sessions and setting it up, as opposed to, I mean, right now it's still someone will come in, and I just did a session where they work in Logic predominantly, and so I had to go through that, but they're actually coming back in 2 weeks, and just having that flexibility, they are excited because we'll be recording Logic and he'll be able to run the computer and set it up and everything. And it's forced me to get up on my other DAWs, which has been good. Jeff out there uses PreSonus predominantly. He touches Pro Tools grudgingly. So I now know PreSonus is Studio One, and that's a really fabulous DAW. I still prefer Pro Tools, but it's good. And it offers a lot of flexibility that, honestly, Pro Tools is still trying to catch up to in terms of just speed of flow and just being able to work in a different way, I think. It's pretty awesome. And I think that's been the coolest thing, is that any kind of artist is able to get inspired here.
So the Neve is discrete transistor. It's transformer in and out, right?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I worked on one of the output modules for Millennium Media.
Oh, excellent.
For copying the Neve.
Yeah.
The old Neve design. It's got a pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, very interesting.
It's really awesome. I'm definitely looking forward to Vintage King coming up, because that's sort of the last phase of the remodel. Is we're going to be getting all... We've got 5 modules back right now, and we've got 5 more out to Vintage King. And so that's sort of the first phase, is getting all of our EQ and pre's working in tip-top condition. The second phase, which is going to be really cool, is that we're actually going to shut down for, you know, a week or 2 weeks, probably in November. And 2 technicians are going to come up, and they're going to gut this whole board and redo as much as possible as they can get done. I don't understand how they could do everything in 2 weeks, but I'm really excited, because getting those guys in here, it's, you really start to understand the genius that Rupert Neve was when he designed it, and the team that he had around it. And they were just doing things in such a cool way that have kind of become industry standards now, but we take it for granted because they were such trendsetters.
So they had all transformer inputs, because it used to be a broadcast recording studio.
Yeah.
They were souders.
Yeah. I don't know too much about how it was used. I'm just now learning the ins and outs of, like, the inner workings, and, yeah, it's crazy.
That's the magic in it.
Yeah.
If they're putting the iron back in the console,
right,
it's because it sounds so much
better. Yeah.
Do you mostly mix through the board as well as track through it, or is it different project?
It's something that we definitely recommend to most of our clients, because we prefer doing that, and we notice it most in the low end. The low end, going through the board is so much tighter and so much punchier and just cleaner. But practically, it's still not that practical for a client. So it's mostly in the box, but it is kind of cool that, I mean, just with the modern workflow, we've got it down where even just passing stems through the board, and, you know, we can tell our clients, like, you, instead of having to book a week to mix an album down here, we can mix in our computer and get, you know, all the precision automation movements and things like that done in the box, then just book a day down here, and then we can send the stems out, and just sending the stems through there and running it through our compressing units or getting something from Rich and bringing it in, it makes such a huge difference, and clients are able to recognize that difference, and we're still, it makes it easier, and we can do little tweaks going into it. That's the biggest thing whenever someone wants to mix on the board is the modern client has gotten used to calling up 3 weeks after the mix, oh, could you actually bring the vocals down a dB, like, at this last bit? And so that's where in the box is the only way to do it. So you're still playing with that, and we still got a preface. Even if we do the stem here, it's going to be a completely different mix if they ask for a tweak. So that's still floating around, but it does make it a lot more manageable and a lot easier, and we're starting to definitely return to that just because it sounds so much better. It really does.
So you started doing a tape recording project, music on analog tape, and I haven't worked that way for a long time.
Oh, man, that's got to be...
It's fun, but it's also kind of like a relearning curve.
Yeah, there's a relearning curve, and then you also start to remember all the flaws that come from analog tape presented.
I also remember that when the client asks, can you do this?
Yeah.
Just say no.
Yeah. Well, and that's the biggest thing too, is we can, within 5 minutes, we can be tracking any band to tape, and it's great, it's easy on our end. The biggest thing is prefacing to the client, your workflow is going to be drastically different. It's going to be, we get three cool takes, and then you're going to be sitting around for 20 minutes while we listen through everything and dump it in the computer. Bands are used to just being like, next take, next take, next take, and being able to go until their arms fall off. So That's the biggest hurdle, I guess, with that. But on our end, it's a complete joy. And if we find the band that's able to commit to that, then it's like, yeah, let's do that. So.
Are you doing your 52 clients analog?
It's a mixture. It, depending on the track, depending on what we're doing. The band that is actually going to be coming out this Monday is a local band called Old Bottle Black. And they're really... like raw blues rock, like really cool. They're total gearheads. They had just amazingly cool guitars and guitar amps and stuff. And so pretty early on in the process, me and Jonathan were in on the session. He looked at me and was like, I think we're going to tape this one. Like, this is the right band. And so we got to do all the basics to tape. The only thing not to tape on that was the leads, lead vocals. But otherwise, we were just getting takes with this band, and it was amazing. It was the right kind of project.
Cool.
Sweet.
Thank you.